Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. Excitingly, we've got a guest on, Lisa Carlin, and we have an amazing conversation about today's topic, which is how to build capability in a business to innovate and transform itself. Starting a business is hard, but keeping it constantly changing and transforming can be hard as well. This is a great conversation that breaks that down in a fun and interesting way. We also used a new recording software, so if you check out the video on Spotify, you can see us all nice and clear. As always, everybody, have a magical week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. This week, we have a guest on, and it's very exciting, and we'll get to them very shortly. But first, we've got to check in with Danette, who's under some inclement weather. What's going on, Danette? How are you going?
Well, we were supposed to get no rain for the next 10 days, and then it just started bucketing down, but it's stopped now, so maybe it'll be quiet, or I'll just go on mute most of today. Yes, but awesome. Have an apology from Graham, who's had food poisoning this week and also had to do 2 days of workshops, the poor thing. So he's had a full-on week, so he's actually napping at the moment, which is very good.
That's a great idea. I think that's good for him. Rest up, Graham. We'll see him next time, no doubt about it. Thanks for that, Danette. And our guest, Lisa. Lisa Carlin, how are you going this week?
Hi, Jez. Hi, Danette. I'm looking forward to talking with you today. It's been a really, really busy week. And but good. I was in Japan last week. So this week's just, you know, catching up.
Well, that's exciting. Tell us a little bit about your Japan trip before we get into this.
Oh, it was fantastic. My first time there, and I was just blown away by the technology. I'm a tech geek, and I just love gadgets and things. So I had robots in the hotel delivering things to the rooms. I had all these high-tech toilets, which were just brilliant, and there's just nothing better in winter. I was blogging about this on LinkedIn. There's just nothing better in winter than sitting on a nice warm toilet seat. And it's just a luxury. And, you know, and then I was sitting in a restaurant and a robot waiter came up and delivered my food. So, you know, it was just fun. It was interesting.
Well, Lisa, we appreciate you coming back from the future to be on this podcast. It sounds like that's really amazing. That sounds like an awesome trip. Glad we caught you fresh, relaxed, and ready to chat. Now, before we get into it, I want to introduce you to people that may be being introduced to you for the first time. So a little bit about Lisa. Lisa grew up in South Africa, where she experienced apartheid in its truest form. The complete unfairness of the system drove her to become extremely passionate about transformation and to give a voice to those who don't have one. Lisa is the co-founder and director of global advisory for the Future Builders Group and author of Turbocharge Weekly, a newsletter read by 7,000 business leaders. Her portfolio includes mentoring founders and executives in the tech sector. She's recently retired from the chair of an education not-for-profit. Lisa's professional focus is accelerate growth, transformation and scale-ups, which explains in more and strategy execution than strategy. She explains is more than strategy execution than strategy. Sorry about that, Lisa, but I mean, amazing. I'm so happy to have you on, Lisa. What, it's always lovely to have on someone who's got such a broad breadth of skills and stuff. So Lisa, thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having me, Jez and Danette.
Awesome. Now, today when I, you know, as always, I throw out the topic to the guest. I say, you tell us what you'd like to talk about. And you gave us a lot of really good information, but I've sort of condensed it down into the, I guess, the headline, how to build capability in a business to innovate and transform itself. One of the great interesting questions is, you know, it can be easier for people to build a business than to allow it to become an organic thing that adapts and transforms itself. So I guess, Lisa, would you be able to tell us a little bit about why you chose this topic as well?
Sure, Jez. I really innovation and transformation is my passion. So as you mentioned in the intro, just growing up in South Africa, there was so many problems in the community created by apartheid, and which still carries on today. And it just made me really see what happens when people don't have a voice. And I joined a multicultural organization as a teenager and got to meet, young people from all different cultures. And it was just so difficult to socialize when we were outside of the forum, because there's just no way we could go. Couldn't go to the movies together, couldn't go to a restaurant together, couldn't even go to a public beach or park and sit on the same, park bench. There were, park benches for whites only, blacks only, with big signs. I mean, it's just sounds so antiquated and bizarre in today's society, doesn't it? And I guess... just speaking to people who just felt like they didn't have a voice, didn't have a vote, didn't have it, didn't count in society. And I also felt like I, didn't have a voice, because our organization was actually banned by the government, a couple of years later. And I could go on and on and tell you some heartbreaking stories. Like, I'd open up the student newspaper when I was at university and saw one of the people from our group that had been arrested. And I never heard of him. I never heard about him again. You know, people used to just disappear. There were no trials. There was no communication. And so I'm very passionate about people having a voice. And I, through my work, I've seen what a difference that makes in organizations, and how through giving people at all different levels of the organization a voice in what's happening and truly listening to them, as well as the customer, by the way, not only the people in the organization. It just, if you're really listening with intent to do things differently, you can create such amazing innovation and really transform what the organization is doing. And we just need to transform now because of, the business environment so fast changing. So, yeah, that's maybe a long answer. I'm very passionate about it. And I'm happy to talk about any of those aspects a bit more if you like. But that's the short of it.
Well, Lisa, I think it's definitely something we can all get behind, and what a powerful story to kind of bring on this sort of way of looking at things, and I love it. So thanks so much for being on, Lisa, and sharing your story with us. It's amazing. I think it might be best to just jump into the first question. We can kind of go from there. So I might start with you, Jeanette. What was your question, and tell us about why you chose it?
So, Lisa, I always love at least two questions. So I'll start with the first one, which is, what are some great ways to build capability in a business in order to innovate and transform itself? So it sort of seems to lead from what you were just talking about.
Yeah. So the main approach is just really human-centric. So really training people up to have the skills to be future-proofed. And learning what they need to do, and encouraging them to go ahead and do things differently. So having that sort of open, so training in terms of skills is really important. The other thing is that So a number of organizations more recently, I'm finding, I don't know if you're seeing that, but they're putting together these like digital academies or learning academies in-house, where they actually have these programs to develop people's skills to prepare them for the future. So I'm happy to talk about that in more detail. The other aspect besides training is the culture. So having that mindset of learning. I love Carol Dweck's concept of just having that learning mindset. So the culture is the second part. So the third part of that is just disrupting the status quo. And you can do that by hiring in disruptive people. People who have disruptive ideas rather than disruptive people, should I say. Feed in some spark and new ways of working. So I think by bringing in people from the outside, either through consultants or advisors or training companies or speakers or hiring different people. And diversity of people, I think that brings in some great innovative ideas. So that's as a start, those three, I would say.
Love that answer. Awesome. Thank you so much. And my second question is, then why do businesses fail to build that capability? What stops them?
Yeah. Look, a lot of the organizations, the bigger, I work with from very small organizations right through to very large organizations and multinationals. And the issue is the biggest inhibitor I see to changing an organization is the culture. And so if the culture is tends to be anti-innovation, so that in a way, a typical cultural archetype described by human synergistics is oppositional, right? So they have a great tool called the organizational cultural inventory that I use a lot. And so it measures the organization quite quantitatively in terms of behaviors and culture. And you can actually see whether people have got that, they tend to say no rather than yes. And in those kind of environments, that can drown out the ideas. And so it's those organizations. So I'll give you an example of one where, it's very fear-based. People will, they know that if they bring new ideas in, others are going to be quite cynical towards them. And so they feel so fearful of putting forward new ideas. And because they just know they're going to be shouted down and it's not going to be accepted well. So in those environments, it's extremely difficult to move forward.
Thank you. Love that idea and totally agree. Every experience I've had where I hear the no buts versus the yes ands. It's like, exactly. Yeah, okay, we're not going to move forward here.
You've nailed it.
Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah, amazing. And Lisa, it's, such a good point. I mean, whenever I hear of this type of stuff, I always, I think back to old workplaces where there was no room for innovation at all and how stifling that can feel as someone who sometimes can see better ways to do things, but you feel unable to even discuss them. It's a really interesting problem, and I'm glad that we're talking about it.
And what's quite interesting is that, it can affect even the most confident of people when you bring those people into the organization and they feel like they don't have a voice. So an example is I worked with one organization where we went through a significant cultural change. And, we did some of the things I spoke about, like training of people, measuring the culture, feeding it back to people so they could actually see. The training was more like workshops around, there's a better way to do things. And one of the guys, there was a distribution center and he was a forklift driver. And after we've implemented some changes, one of them really stood out, which was that, so it was a very fear-based culture, a no culture. And we implemented these ideas of huddles where the blue-collar workers in the morning would come together in the warehouse or the factory, and they were in the different factories, and they would have a conversation every morning about their ideas, and people would listen, right? And they'd write them down and they'd do something about them. And we did some videos afterwards of some of the staff, and I went to this one chap who was a really burly man, big man, a lot of tattoos on him. He was a really strong presence, and a big confident person. And he spoke about how scared he was to come to work and how scared he was if he made a mistake, he was blamed and nobody listened to him and he felt really insignificant. And it was in such contrast to his physique, which was so, his voice and his presence was such a powerful person. And yet this organization had humbled him to a point where he just felt like he was not important. And then he says, since they've had this this program and they've come together in the morning in these huddles, he says he's now excited to go to work. And he feels like his colleagues, his workmates have got his back, he said. And you just saw this beautiful smile on his face. And, he gave some examples of things that he says, one of the things we really wanted a microwave at work. And we made the suggestion and now we've got a microwave and they listen to me. And so, it's just those things. Okay, so that's not a big innovative thing, but that's a really important thing for him and his world. And, and a few hundred dollars, you've got a microwave and it's made a huge difference to people. And so that's what's exciting to me, that you can take these cultures that are so anti-innovation and so no but, in Danette's words, and then get them to yes and, you know, it's, and you see the reward. And we also looked at the stats in terms of the productivity in the distribution center and the packing rates, and they'd all significantly lifted. So I know there's a lot of noise around data, and it's really hard to, you know, determine exactly what it is that's caused it, but everything was heading in the right direction. So it's very rewarding when you see that.
Yeah, and it's amazing also in some other way what you're saying there, Lisa, in the sense that sometimes innovation is just a microwave in the kitchen. You know, it's just, it's a change, you know, it's any change. So that's, I mean, it's it really shows the sort of spectrum of how much you can kind of think of change. You know, it doesn't just have to be at a huge company level. It can be for a personal lunch level, and that's still going to change people. So I think that's really amazing. I might jump into my question here, Lisa, which I think kind of, I guess, is a little bit similar to that. So you sent through a bit of info, and one of the words that really stood out to me was human-centric. So I agree with making things a little more human-centric, given that, you know, there are humans that are doing the jobs. So I guess, where does that start for a business, and how can you tell if a business is good at making things human-centric?
That's a lovely question, because that human-centric, you know, that listening is just is so important. And it's really starts with building people's capability around, you know, a raft of things, of skills that they need that aren't just the specialist part of their jobs. So if you think of the T-shaped model, which a lot of the people listening, if they're interested in learning, would know, you know, you've got your horizontal top of the T, which is generalist skills, and then you've got the vertical part of the T, which is your specialist skills. That horizontal part of the T is just, you know, having those general sort of problem-solving type skills and interpersonal skills and things, leadership skills that are so important, and just ability to be able to get things done on a scale, and so those are some of the things that I'm really passionate about. So getting people involved in projects where it can develop those skills is very powerful, and it creates a win-win, and a big win. I think it's a win for the business in terms of financials. It's a win for the people that are driving the change and the transformation in terms of their impact and careers, and the appreciation that they get. And it's a hugely big win for the staff in the organization, who feel involved and feel listened to and can grow their skills. So in terms of how to do that, part of it is training. Part of it is getting people involved in the cross-functional working groups. So usually they are around something very specific that the organization wants to do. So for example, we've done some around sales. So a new sales strategy to lift sales in a mature organization, and then setting up a cross-functional working group around that, for example. And that's very powerful, because people can feel quite special when they've been invited into one of those groups, and they get to work with people from different parts of the organization and share ideas. And so I've seen it accelerate their careers hugely. So one woman was in human resources, and she went from a very junior help desk kind of person, just answering the, you know, questions around payroll and people policy, all the way through to a very high-end strategic HR business partner. And that being on that on a project, a cross-functional project team, really helped her career, because people realized how good she was and could see her, and she was became so much more visible in the organization. So it's a great way for people to get, you know, talented people to accelerate their careers, and it gives innovation a bit of a home in the structure. So that's training being sort of the capability lifting is the first, cross-functional teams is the second. And then you also asked me how to tell if a business is good at it. And that brings me to the third part, which is the measurement. So I usually develop with organizations a customized measurement tool. and where we can measure behaviour at the start and we measure behaviour at the end. And even developing the tool, we do that with people, so people get a chance to actually contribute to what they're going to be measured on. And and it's very powerful, because then you can actually see exactly whether they're good and how good and where what, you know, and you know what good looks like. That really importantly. So those are really powerful. I call them skills maps or behavioral maps, or sometimes some people call them competency profiles. Just depends how granular it is. And that's very powerful. And because I believe those sorts of skills maps are such a powerful development tool, I've developed one which you can find on our website for folks who want to lead transformation and want to lead strategy execution and want to be really good at it. And it blends three disciplines. So one is business acumen, so just business strategy, kind of, you know, just understanding the business, whatever the subject matter area that one's working in. Second of all is the change management skills, to understand people and be able to manage that change and get some momentum in the business, which is a really important part of transformation and strategy execution. And so the business, I describe them with three circles. So the business is the kind of where you're headed, right? It's the precision around the transformation. The change management circle is the momentum. And then the third circle is project management or project governance. And that's what gives you the traction to get where you want to go. And so it's all those three things modified to the culture of the business, and those are the skills for strategy execution. And I've put them into a questionnaire, and it's called the Transformation Success Score, and it's on our website, so futurebuildersgroup.com towards the bottom, and people can do that for free, and then they get an email back which gives them a detailed percentage around 10 of the different attributes. So things like the ability to do design, communication, how do you interact with the leadership in the business, how do you interact with stakeholders. Those are some of the dimensions. Yeah.
Fantastic. That sounds like a great little tool, and we'll have the link to that available in the description, so you can just go jump straight on that and give that a go, see how you go with that. That's amazing. Thank you so much for that, Lisa, and such an interesting thing that you've mentioned. I've jotted down a lot of notes there, a lot of things to sort of think about after this. But I might jump into Kanika's question here. So Kanika's, I guess, question might be a little, I think it's to do with culture a little bit, which is, it can be a real struggle for businesses to let go of old ways of doing things sometimes. Sometimes changes suggested by employees may struggle to make it up to management. Are there ways to adjust the culture to make them more open to change and innovation?
So, yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you about two examples, which are some of my favorites. So one is where we have had a very siloed culture in a professional services firm. So each team is very different, as a different practice, and they feel that their whole practice area and what they do is quite different from the rest of the firm. So trying to get a one size fits all does not work, and getting change in those kind of organizations because of it is very hard. So you talk about, you know, making changes and getting those ideas up to management. If you've got a siloed organization and you're getting ideas from very different parts of the organization, it's extremely hard to do anything with that, because there's no, often no forum or process to be able to deal with those ideas. So we set up the firm is really keen to innovate. And we set up, and particularly around customer service. So we set up these structured, facilitated workshops where the different practices could come up with their ideas for improvement. And what was, around customer service. And it was run, we ran it in a sort of consistent kind of process. but the teams could come up with any ideas that they want. So people really felt heard and they really felt ownership around the three different things. So each group came up with three different things. And what was terrific is that there was such consistency, even though they all felt different and they used different words, and but there were some consistent themes that came up across the groups that we were then able to, as a small central project team, do something about. And we could do that, and we could offer this as a solution to people in a way that they felt it's something they've asked for and they, you know, they've driven it. You get leverage there, right? Because you can introduce, it's like the microwave example, right? You can find things that you can introduce that, you know, everybody might have seen as a slightly different situation. So somebody might have said, I'm just giving this as an example, right? So if it was the microwave, somebody might have said, I want a microwave. Somebody else might have said, I was brought up in an Asian country and we like hot food. And so, you know, I just feel like I'm different, or it might have come in, you know, they might have expressed it in a different way, right? And then the microwave might have been a good solution for them. Or somebody else in another group might have said, we really need some team bonding time and we should do something around lunchtimes these aren't custom example service examples because they were different in that context, but I'm just giving you an example of how symptoms or the way something is described can be quite different in different groups, yet you can find some common themes and ways of weaving solutions together that you can provide things to people and they feel like they've been heard, and that makes a really, really big difference. So that's one example. Maybe that's enough. Would you like me to talk through another one?
I mean, I find that so fascinating. It's a really good point that sometimes different things cause different symptoms, but your idea of just being able to quarterize it all and be like, oh, this is all stemming from this is really interesting. So actually, yeah, if you do have another example, that would be awesome.
Okay. Well, what often executives struggle with is actually getting really clear, unfiltered feedback from people, because some of them will be confident enough to explain what they're thinking or their ideas, and some won't. And especially the quieter people are often, you know, they're often the ones that are closer to the customer or more junior and have some fantastic ideas. So it can really prevent the development of a culture, you know, taking it forward to a more positive place. So in one organization, we had done a diagnostic and it said that the organization did not treat mistakes well. They were, you know, they didn't handle, there was a lot of that kind of no culture. So there's another organization that's a no-based organization. So we set up workshops, starting at the bottom of the organization with people at the same level. And then we took some of the feedback from that group and fed it up to the next level up, which were the supervisor level, if you like, team leader. And then fed that up to the middle management, and then fed that up to... So we ran these structured workshops. And what we did was we heard some very confronting feedback. So one person said somebody was shouted at in front of all their colleagues for making a mistake. And it was something like, can't you read, you effing idiot, right, was the comment that this person was told by their manager in front of everybody else. And so what we did was we recorded some sound bites like that one with anonymous voices, but using the same quotes that people said. And we played that to the next level up. And there was this amazing, you can just imagine it being, you know, it went down like a lead balloon. People were just, they were horrified that that's what was happening in that organization. Horrified. And those comments were so powerful that we landed up playing them all the way up through to the top, to the board in the organization. And that organization decided to handle mistakes in a very different way and publicly, right? And, you know, that example and that phrase, which I now remember several years later, word for word, it's powerful. It's really, really powerful. So those are the kinds of things you can do. You know, they're all different techniques, but those are some ideas around what people can do to really hear what's going on and get the real ideas. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. What a great example. I mean, that's really fascinating. And what an interesting way of showing it up the board by just sort of taking, I guess, the personalization out of it, but still utilizing the key information. Great stuff, Lisa. I love that.
Can I just add, Jez, that when you do that, it's really important to keep people at the same organizational level where they feel comfortable and psychologically safe. So those groups, you've got to think about them really carefully and set the scene to have those conversations. You cannot just walk in and expect people to open up. There's got to be trust. And so, you know, that's just an absolute key ingredient, that people need to feel safe and they need to feel, yeah, that there's going to be no repercussion on their career.
Great. No, thank you so much for that, Lisa. I might jump to Allegra's question, which I guess is sort of bounces a little bit off this one, but what problems might businesses that are not innovating and having human-centric approaches likely to run into? So what are some consistent problems those businesses might look for? And I guess if you're in one, are maybe some signs?
Yeah. Look, you'll know. You'll know because things will not be going great. So one organization had implemented a system. They hadn't really listened to how the business had run. They hadn't really done their homework properly. And part of the system did the billing and clients stopped paying. So they ran into a massive cash flow problem. Massive. So, you know, that's one. And we implemented what we called a PIT team, process improvement team, which was a cross-functional working team. We just called it the PIT team and fixed up those problems, you know, found the issues, whatever, and implemented them and sorted it all out. But that organization would have gone to the wall if it didn't have a very global parent with very deep pockets to, most businesses who had that kind of cash flow problem would have gone insolvent and be wound up. So that's one extreme. Another organization I've seen who consistently have issues around innovation has been acquired. Because they just, as the industry matured, their products are becoming more and more commoditized. People don't want to pay for them, and they're just losing share slowly but surely. So, another player in the marketplace has overtaken them and bought them out. So, they're not happy stories. Their environments, if you speak to between 5 and 8 people in an organization, you can tell the culture, right? Straight, you'd tell it from the first few. And but certainly by the 8th person, you'll get it and you'll get to a point where you don't even learn anything new by talking to more people. You'll get a sense of what that culture is and what's going on. And then you can see it in the financial results ultimately. You know, sometimes it takes a while to translate, but you'll see it there. It's interesting because if I think of some of the leaders I've seen, CEOs in operation over the years, there have been some that are highly autocratic. And in the past, some of those people, because the environment was less complex, they could just be lucky or they could be smart and they could be right about the calls that they made and the businesses could be fine. Now, increasingly, it is so complex to run a business that not one person doesn't have all the right, they can't make all the right calls all the time. So those autocratic styles are becoming more and more risky for those people. So they may have, you know, very big egos and just think they know how to do things the right way. Those are the people that are becoming, you know, very stale. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. And that concept of just talking to a couple people as well and then getting the idea as well, that I feel like also resonates and makes sense to me, you saying that. I might jump into our last question here, Lisa, which is from Marg, and she asks, are there certain ways to hire, to find talent that lend themselves to innovation and transformation, or can anyone learn it?
So it's definitely a skill that can be learned if people have that mindset, that learning, you know, open learning mindset that we spoke about. So you can hire in folks with innovative backgrounds, as I mentioned, that sort of mixes it up nicely. So that definitely will help by hiring some folks. You can bring in temporary folks who, you know, like through vendors and, you know, people can run workshops and, you know, trainers like Magical Learning, who will bring in new ideas. But you can also teach it, you know, and you can also teach it. So learning from the people that you bring in and also teaching it to, so which is, I guess, something that you guys do a lot of. So I've set up last year a membership academy because I think memberships are a great way for people to learn. It's different from participating in a workshop one-off, learning a whole bunch of skills that can be hard to implement without a good follow-on through like coaching and, you know, setting up managers to coach their people or whatever, you know, you're doing follow-on training and all the sorts of things that I'm sure you guys as a learning business do to encourage retention. Another way to do it is to to join a membership where you're learning all the time and future-proofing. And so that's what I've done for all the ingredients of transformation. So it starts off with a foundational set of modules around change management, project management, understanding AI tools and how to use those in becoming more productive. And so the three circles, which is a business skill. So the business, projects and change being the three main skills, and then all adapted to culture. So there's a module on culture, how to diagnose your culture, and then how to work within the culture successfully to get things done and also to change the culture itself. So they're those foundations. And then every month we run these sessions, these masterclasses. Everyone gets a new playbook with editable PowerPoints that they can go and use these frameworks straight away in their business to make a difference. And then we have group coaching sessions. So also once a month where we've got members from all around the world. It's a growing group. Some people just listen to the videos afterwards and some of them come and bring their problems. And on the topic of the month. So at the moment we're doing business cases and recommendations. How do you, just as an example, so everybody, whether you're whatever part of the business you're in, you are presenting a proposal or a recommendation or a business case or a strategy to somebody to get sign off to get something done. So how do you do that in a way that is with taking this multidisciplinary lens of change management? So how do you influence people? Culture, so how do you understand the culture that you're presenting within and to get your business case over the line, having that business approach, so and including scientific data in your approach, a business data driven approach, and then also the project management of it and presenting it in a coherent way to get sign off to move on to a next milestone. So those are the kinds of topics that we teach, and I just love it. And I'm so excited by the early feedback that I'm getting from people that A, these skills are really important. B, it's helping them go out and feel more confident at working on different sorts of projects from what they've traditionally worked on. Meeting new people and being able to learn from them and connect with other people. And then people just saying they feel a bit more confident in their ability of what they can actually do. It gives them some way of almost legitimizing the skills that they've actually got. So that's it's called the Turbocharge Turbocharge Your Transformation membership. And it's exciting that people type in Turbocharge Your Transformation and we come up first, and getting there.
Growing it. Well, I'll save people the effort of having to Google you. I'll put the link right in the description. But, I mean, if you do forget, you can always type in Turbocharge Transformation if you want to go check it out on Google. Thank you so much, Lisa. This has been an amazing conversation. I've taken so many notes, so many interesting bits and pieces. Before we get into that, though, Danette, any final thoughts you had on today's conversation and how to build capability in a business to innovate and transform itself?
Totally loved the conversation. The examples that you shared as well, Lisa, really, really resonated. I once had a partner in a firm who said to one of my staff, "You are an effing idiot," and then walked back into their office and slammed the door. And they did that in front of the entire firm. Yeah. And it was like, I went in and I was like, what were you trying to say to that person? Because that wasn't how to say it. And I left that firm. I was like, I can't work with a culture not like that. It is, isn't it? And that poor person.
Danette, there's something that always I've always remembered. There's a very successful CEO out there in Australia who I met many, many years, probably 15, 20 years ago. And I met him, or hardly met him is probably not the word, was exposed to his management style when he came into a meeting with me and a whole bunch of people in his organization. And he wasn't a CEO then, he was probably a senior manager, I'd say. And he dressed somebody down publicly in that group without even knowing all of us. Like he didn't know who I was. And he came in and was ranting on about how this person hadn't done something really critical. And just like exactly in the way that, you know, really blunt and ugly. And I'm just amazed that people like that can get to the CEO level. I am amazed that, he's learned, but I don't know. It's just amazing.
And yeah, totally agree.
Soul destroying that people can be successful in their career by standing on other people.
Yeah, and it's so not the way forward. So I love, like, I'm all about collaboration and curiosity and all of the things that you love. And so I loved your approaches and just helping create that safety so that cultures can change. So thoroughly enjoyed this. I have my own podcast that we also promote called Adapt with Danette FM. I'm going to ask you on that as well. But we'd love to have you back when our whole team is together too, because this was such a great conversation. So thank you, Lisa. Really appreciate it.
Fantastic, Danette. Thanks for the opportunity to have such a great conversation with you guys and answer all these interesting questions.
Yeah, no, and I just wanted to echo that. I mean, I've taken so many notes. This has been really interesting, and I love how you've approached a lot of different problems, Lisa. So this is just, you know, some of the ways that you've just even thought of approaching them have been really interesting to me. So I want to thank you so much. Do you have any final thoughts on how to build capability in a business and innovate and transform itself and today's conversation?
Just a final thought I think I could end off with, which is what I've just put at the top of my LinkedIn, which is get out of the dark room, right? And to fast track your strategy at scale. So, that's what's critical is instead of doing things the old way where, you know, you huddled in a separate room from everybody else, developed the strategy, came out and announced it to everybody else. That's what I call dark room strategy. Let's get out of that dark room and rather invite people in from the start and co-design and co-create.
I love that approach. I think that's awesome, Lisa, and I totally agree. And I think that's amazing. Now, if someone's listened to this and they've gone, you know what, I need to talk to Lisa. These are some great ideas. This is an approach I need in my business. Where's the best place for them to reach out to you, Lisa?
They can find me on LinkedIn. So our organisation is called Future Builders. If you find another Lisa Carlin, I'm the one that's with Future Builders. And you can find me on Turbocharge Your Transformation. That's the membership group. It's just a $99 a month membership. So the whole idea is that it's affordable. And I'm about to come up with an annual cost so that it's easier for people as well. So they can find me there, and they could, I just welcome people from, we have all different disciplines of people. So it's usually one and two level below C-suites, the people that would join. I'd love people to come along and try us out.
Well, I agree. I think I'm going to have to get on there as well. It sounds great, Lisa. So to everybody, first of all, Lisa, thank you so much for being on. Danette, thank you so much for being on. Great questions. I want to thank everybody that's been sharing the show. It's been great. We've been loving it. And as always, everybody, have a magical week.